Like to start the Q&A session. Who wants to get the brownie asking the first question?
Thank you. It's Martin Wilkie from Citi. At your last earnings numbers, you talked about investment in PLM systems as well as the sort of general ramp up in IT. Could you just talk a little bit about how you're going to be using PLM systems that differs from some of the big established players, Siemens and Dassault, if it's in collaboration with what they're offering, and how you're going to be making an offering to your customers with that, or whether it's really to improve your own internal processes around using PLM. Thank you.
Let me start, and I think today you have the opportunity to also talk to Larry, because the PLM is one of the big driver how we want to get more efficient in the system side. You know, we did start PLM to look at our own process and to optimize our own process, how we work on the system side and to get the cost down on the system side. But Larry, why don't you tell a bit about the PLM experience and what we're going to drive, because in the end we have different players globally and we want to have one standard, we want standardized processes to get more efficiency in our own processes.
Yeah, I think our initial goal, I'm sorry, what was your first name?
Mark.
Mark. So our initial goal was really to look inside of ourselves and say, okay, how do we optimize? You're always doing that operationally. That's just part of doing business. But then we said, okay, we can optimize ourselves individually in the U.S. or in Augsburg or in Shanghai or in Sao Paulo or wherever we are in the world. And Till and Peter came to say, look, guys, we need to do this in a global environment. So we kicked off what we call Orange Globe. And we had all started PLM in our own little worlds because we're fairly sizable companies. And when we kind of pulled it together, it delayed us for, let's say, 6 months. But then we found the real power of it, because at the end of the day, we're using it strictly for us to deliver huge savings. I would say conservatively on an annual basis, we're saving, I think our ROI was in less than 1.5 years. That's dramatic for most things I'm looking at from a cap investment perspective. And the thing I love about it the most, Mark, is that you have an incredible opportunity that your people, for the first time, I've been doing this stuff probably too long, but at the end of the day, most people don't like change, especially engineers. They like doing things, suck. And in this specific case, our people are almost begging for it. When you show it to them, you give them an idea how it works, it's incredible. And I put it in a simple world. I don't know if you guys play golf. I apologize. I'll use my golf term. PLM is a very simple thing, and I'll explain it this way. If you hit a drive in a golf ball and it goes out in the fairway and you want to hit now to the green, you have to go find a sprinkler head and pace off the distance and find all this information and do some math, and then, of course, hit your next shot. A PLM just says, I walk up to it, and it tells me immediately on the screen where I am. And that's all it does for our engineers, our manufacturing people, and it's real-time in the customer's plant, in our plants, all around the world. And it's consistent. So if I go to China or if I go to Augsburg, or I go no matter where I am, I'm looking at the same basic solution. So our people are much more efficient. It takes away all the clutter, and it gives them only the focus on what their role and responsibility is.
Okay. Next question, please.
Lucy.
Jane. Yeah. Oh, Lucy.
Lucy.
I'll pass it on. Lucy Carrier from Morgan Stanley. I understand we only have one question. So I'll try to choose one out of all of the many I had. One is more in terms of capturing growth and capturing value. I mean, you have invested in R&D quite significantly over the last years. A lot of new products have come in. I remember your last Capital Markets Day, you had also presented the Sunrise platform as well. Obviously, the IWAS, the collaborative robots. And then we are seeing all that evolution, you know, on industrial Internet of Things, which seems to be generating for your customers a lot of value. However, over the last few years, the organic top-line growth hasn't been necessarily tremendous, and you are only targeting, and I'm being here a devil advocate, but you're only targeting 7.5% margin at the end of your 2020 cycle. And it's difficult, I think, to connect the advantage and all the benefits you are bringing to your customer with the fact that the growth has been quite limited and that your upside potential in terms of profitability seems a bit relatively small versus where it is today.
So thanks for the challenge, Lucy. you know the numbers, the 4 to 4.5 billion, 7.5%, Peter and I was laying down last year in the spring. And I think it's important that this was in the end, prior to any 4.0 digitalization profits. I think we have laid down now the path how we want to go and to invest, and coming up to a couple of things. On the growth side, I think Larry also pointed well out that on the automotive side, we are number one. Out of 3 billion, we have 50% automotive, and the automotive is growing globally. We have good numbers in U.S. We have, some great opportunity in China, and I think Europe will be more challenging. And this means overall the growth in automotive will be something between up to 5%, that we also indicate on the Bilanz press conference. The big opportunity, and that's also why you had the opportunity to talk to Stefan and to David and to Larry's aerospace piece, is the growth will come from GI. You know, looking at the pure robotic piece, robotic is growing above 10% globally, so that's clearly an opportunity and challenge for Stefan that we grow our business to 1.5 billion above 10%, and then also have additional service, additional opportunities. We are investing in Swisslog and products. We got the industry award of the Hannover Fair yesterday for Swisslog, which also, you know, on the advanced item picking to have a more efficient logistics process, you know, goods to person, then having the packing of goods. So we are investing in products, Swisslog side, Stefan side on the robot, but at the same time also investing into the big data people, big data team, having the Austin people, having people in Augsburg, and this means that we are going to invest into more software. And the chart I had, Larry, can you give me just the flipper in the end, and I don't want to give you today a concrete, but it's, you know, the number is above 7.5%. So, and let's talk about the delta in the next couple of months and quarters, because, you know, the topic I mentioned here is, one more. This is exactly the question. We are bringing value to the customers. We are increasing software. We are much more moving towards having more software, and this should be also shown in the margin profile we do have. And this is something we're working on, and clearly with more software and web-based, IT-based software, we want to increase our profitability and working on service. One example of value, like today, you have an existing plant, and we can offer customers just, okay, we are going to have we are running your plant, or we do a program based on the data to run your plant more efficient. And then we are not paid on the component or on the line. We are only paid on efficiencies. And that's going to change, and I think we, in the coming quarters and coming years, I think this is getting much more crystal, much more clear on our business potential on this Industry 4.0. But I think we are the path, and, you know, also on this page you show where we will have more software. Robots become easier to program, easier to use. We have a bigger family of robots, and this all in the end should come up to more value to customers, and therefore also a better margin for us.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. It's James Settler from Barclays. Well, it's great to hear, by the way, that was also my question on the margin, that you have more upside to the target. Now, my question is, I'm just having visited the Siemens stand where you see this dramatic integration on software and PLM, and, you know, they obviously integrate robots and everything. From the software side, I mean, how can you compete against such a giant? And, you know, obviously, ABB is doing the same thing. I mean, do you really have the resources to
differentiate? Just one second name?
Sorry?
What was the second name?
ABB.
Where they have software?
Indeed, if you just look at how they're spending this kind of money in fully integrated systems and PLM.
Okay. ABB. Okay, I think there's so Siemens itself is totally integrated automation tier, where AOB did not buy a software company, they did not buy Rockwell, so they are not in the same, you know, it's a great company. I don't want to comment our competition. But I think Siemens does have their way of automize and to get it into their platform. I think AOB is much more having this control as we do have, but they don't have this totally integrated automation. For me, and as I have also David commenting on this, Siemens is a closed system. You can connect machines to the Siemens system, but in the end, it is a closed box, and customers have to decide what they want. And in some areas, we will work with Siemens because customer wants to work. In some areas, we work with other partners. And I think the big opportunity on the data side will be that we have to decide, and if we have to decide on partner, then we have different partnerships. In some verticals, and I think that's our opportunity, in some verticals, we're going to work with Siemens, and maybe the customer wants us to be in a Siemens, or a Siemens-like cloud, and in some areas we are maybe working with a Rockwell cloud, in some we're working with a Microsoft cloud, and we will be have a cloud agnostic, and we are really independent of the infrastructure. The second thing, I think we have to be able to work with different partners, and if we can decide, we have to work in our Kuka cloud. And I think it's also what I do see, that depending on vertical, depending on partners, there will be a new environment, and we have to get our part of the cake. And the opportunity is that I would not like to have one partner for all. I would like to choose. I want to have for design, I'm going for Dassault. For simulation, I'm going for Kuka, I go for Siemens. For production planning, I go to X. And I don't want to have one partner doing all. I want to decide which parts I'm getting from which partner. And I think this platform is more like more the ABB thinking. So some parts you bring to the table, some parts you need partners, while Siemens still has this closed shop. And I think we'll see some business goes to the right side, some to the left side, and we will fight for our business. David, want to comment on the...
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's essentially we're going to creatively leverage different partner ecosystems. You can look at something like the Emphasys IIP platform. It's a huge big data platform from a huge player with a massive investment of time and energy into that platform. At the same time, I think, as you said, because we're not investing the tens of thousands of people into, say, a software platform like Siemens, that we're going to have cloud-agnostic nimbleness so we can move to the different players as they come up with different strengths. And then I think really, really importantly, it's a new game when we take the OT technology and move it onto the IT backbones. The web is based on open service-based standards. It's very easy for Kuka, I believe, on top of these technologies to deliver best-in-class solutions for the process know-how we have to our customers by using the internet ecosystem and APIs. So, for example, if someone offers the world's best robot simulation as a service in the cloud, I can very quickly leverage that into the Kuka ecosystem. And so I think you'll see a lot more players that are cloud-based break apart and disrupt these kind of closed systems.
Okay, coming to the next question, gentleman in the back.
Hey, I'm Graham Phillips from Jefferies. Can I ask on KTPO, where are we in that contract? How significant is it within Kuka Systems, and how scalable is it? And if we go back a few years when the automotive industry obviously had a crisis, this was perhaps going to become more of an area that the car manufacturers would outsource on. But I guess the Wrangler is not a particularly high-volume product. Are there any other manufacturers considering this? And as I say, where are we on that particular contract cycle?
First question, we do not disclose where we are on the contract. I think you have all the available information in the annual. So it's a great contract. We got it since 2007. Wrangler Jeep is a unique, and I think it's an iconic product. Values and volumes got up over the last year, so this is a great opportunity. And I think Andreas gives some indication that we have some minimum guarantee, but we cannot disclose any details. Contract is running. Larry, what is 2020? What is the time we have? 2020. So, it is, I think we disclosed already. Everything else is we cannot talk about. I think on KTBO it was a special situation at this time, and I think but the opportunity is on as KTBO. It's for us special because we also own the asset on our balance sheet. And in principle, Kuka is an asset light company, and for me it shows only the business model that we can optimize, that we can run plants very efficiently, and even with data we can do even more efficient in the future. And for the asset part, we will find, if there are models, we find partners. There's enough money outside today with the interest rate on 1%. As you know, there will be asset financing, and I think I like the KTBO model, but I would like to get out the asset part. We can find different investors focused on the asset part, but we could run efficiently plants. We can optimize plants. And it's also when you talk to our customer, then I hand over to Larry. In Europe, we see much more OEMs are thinking about what is their future USP. Really, same like going to communication, where they interface with the customer, and what is about the production line? Are they, do they have to do on their own? Are they only doing final assembly? And much more is maybe moved into tier one, and that shows about the opportunity for example, much more flexible systems in Europe where your partner Frank is working on. But this, I think, is a change, and I think we are in discussion in different platforms with the OEMs and are also prepared for the change. But Larry, you want to talk about the KWO model and the future and the potential?
Yeah, we've been, I would not say constrained, but refrained really from driving that model. Chrysler came to us, actually Daimler came to us when we did the deal, and Zetche was the guy we actually worked with Wolfgang Barnard. That was how long ago the deal was when they owned it. And they were cash constrained, and they came to us and asked them support. And we did have off-balance sheet financing at the time. And we've kind of touched base in Thailand, China, places where it makes sense, because really it's the workforce you struggle with and the adoption of the technology where you really can't drive in new technologies. And I think that alludes to the service platform that Steph was talking about. When you talk about building up a plant without any real workforce. And we're doing that now in supporting Volvo, because the workforce in the south of the United States is not completely robot literate. Great people, but they've been working in the mills and textiles and stuff like that. So in that case, we get a service contract, and that's what we originally started with KTPO, and I think that's a model that we can work with in the future. If our customer, we have three levels. We can drop off the tool. That's not KUKA. We can do it. It's part of our process. We would rather drop off the tool and service that tool, make sure it's efficient, make sure we can truly optimize that tool. And that's what we're doing today. That's today. The future is that we run that plant and we optimize it going forward with model changeover, model changeover, model changeover. And you'll see that a lot in China right now. They have an install base of 40 million units, and they're selling, what, 27? And now they're rechanging all their derivatives and new models, and that's a huge service contract for us. So specifically to KTPO, yes, I think we do it, but it's up to him.
I think it's perfect. We can do the service, we can run the plant, but we don't have to own the asset.
Right.
Us in the first row, please.
Thank you very much. Fritz Bissner from Deutsche Bank. I have a question for the robotics part. So it seems every player is kind of shifting towards GI right now. How would you see your competitive advantage right now, and how do you see this developing in the future in terms of, especially compared to your competitive advantage in automotive, so maybe in terms of market share?
Competitive advantages, we have several. One thing is speed. We are the most robot-focused company in the robotic space. That means we can react faster than anyone else to the changes in the marketplace. Another uniqueness, I would say, is the technology platforms that we are building up now. We talked about the digital part of it. But just looking at our robotics part, it is known to be very high performance, high quality. A lot of the general industry players have been waiting for us to be clear and moving into this space. And we are seeing a fantastic reception by, I would say, the most important brands in the world. We had it here on the show these days, and we had it over the last years, and we see a very good growth. So we are very confident that our technology, our brand image, and our speed will be the uniqueness that's going to win the market share for us.
Can you give us an indication how much your market share is right now in GI and where you think this could go?
Today, we are below the two-digit number in general industry. And we say by 2020 we will be number three in the general industry space.
But let me comment on this, because I think it's important to look that, you know, KUKA is coming from the big, medium size and big robots. So in these areas we have good leading position. But the big increase, it's also where Stefan came to us, is in the 3C sector, where just only on the 3-kilo robot is a 50,000 robotics mark on the industrial side. So the big growth in robot has happened, or did happen, in the smaller robotic piece, where we are now entering 3 years ago with the Argolis, now with the small 3-kilo Argolis. And I think going there in will also help us very much on our market share, which is close to 15% on average. And I think with the 3-kilo, we go into markets where today are not present, and this will help us to get an overall higher market share. and that's also our ambition to do so.
Okay, next question here, gentleman in the middle.
Hi, William Turner, Goldman Sachs. We haven't really spoke about Swisslog that much. Can you talk about what we can expect in the future for that business and when you expect it to turn more profitable?
Yeah, sure. So we took over Swisslog in end of 14. We did the squeeze out in August 15. Until this time, we had to work arm's length, and there was limited way to really change dramatically. I think if you see today, the management of the first and second line is out. We have new people in, which is clearly you have to change the structure. Yesterday we got the industry award from Hannover Fair on a product with Swisslog Coca Corporation. So 2015 was for us a transforming year. We are going to invest further in product, so in intelligent products for Swisslog, and Swisslog is really our path into the logistics area. Big driver, e-commerce. And if you people mention Siemens also focusing on logistics. So you see we have been already there 2 years ago. Logistics is a big driver if you think the combination of logistics and production in the industry. So we are understanding the market, the logistics streams in the plant, and we have to combine this know-how with the production know-how. And therefore, I think for Swisslog, the goal for Swisslog and overall, today they have 600 million, is until 2020 to go to 1 billion. And the margin should be above 5%, but I'm convinced that it's earlier than 2020.
Okay, next question on my left side.
Hi, this is Tantia from Credit Suisse. Thank you for taking my question. It's great to see in the clip that you showed just now that you already have this connected solution for robots in the Microsoft example. So I was just wondering, at that time, how much revenue would you be able to generate from that kind of connected solution for robots as compared to a robot arm that's like standalone on the shop floor, where it's not talking to any kind of MES or any kind of central computer control?
You know, I think that is a very good question, because I also asked my colleagues what is coming from 4.0, what's coming from the connectivity. But I think we are going now to add more people on this pure digitalization. Our business today already lots of software. So if you look in the robotics piece, we have embedded systems, software. So we're working on the controls there. So it is for us, we are in the process of defining the big potential on digitalization. Today in all our business is some kind of software, and it's hard for us today to say, is it today out of 3 billion, do we have 10% purely software business, or is it 4 or 500 million? This is something where we're going to lay out in the next years about the on-top potential of the digitization and on the software side. Today, I think every number would be not right, and we need some more time on this to really look into it where we can really lift on the margin and on the software side. But today, I think, in the robotics, you have every robot coming with a controller. The controller or the robot will be connected in the future to the cloud. So every robot will be, as of next year, be in the end connected to and be able to be connected. And also, if you see about Larry's line, so we are running the line with Microsoft. We have shown last year Microsoft Azure, the cloud, here with the LBR on optimizing production lines. Lots of examples, but can't give you an exact number on this.
Okay, so I guess for software for the controller of robots, the pricing would be embedded kind of in the hardware pricing. So with the cloud services in the future, would you price software as individual package, or would be still sold as an individual?
I would, currently you're talking about components and about single items. I talk about solutions and I talk about services. And I think we are going to offer solutions in different verticals, which are different. In automotive, it could be a big line, and then maybe I sell you welding spots, or I sell you car bodies. I don't want to sell you components. I want to sell you solutions. And then the question is not relevant. I just, I want to solve customers' problems and challenges, and I find the right way, and then I'm getting paid on the outcome. And that is going through in the car industry is going also, Larry, at Boeing. Maybe we are paid by rivet or by fuselage in the 3C. Maybe we're getting paid by iPhone. And that's, I think that is a chance also with data, because we'll have more information to optimize the full line. And I think to go back and say, okay, what is the potential impact of software on pricing? That's a discussion we might have, but I would like to more talk about the benefit for the customer and then think about what share of the benefit is going to Kuka.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good. One question in the back, please.
Hi, it's Andre from Credit Suisse as well. Just a follow-up to that question. So would your margins be different to that solutions business where you sell spot welds or rivets versus the actual standard equipment?
You know, today we have different business, and we have in robotics a margin of between 10 and 11%. We have in Kuka Industries, we have in system margin, which you all know, and you know, also in the system side, Larry, I think 6.5% for this year is our through cycle number. We have now an additional new service. We are entering a new world. You know, today no one is going to Daimler and says, oh, I sell you efficiency of 2% for the next 2 years or 3 years. There's currently no price. And I believe, yes, the software competence will be price-wise or margin-wise accretive to our business. You know, and I think it's not the right answer to tell you, okay, I believe it's 8% or 9%. It will be accretive. And we have to come up with the, you know, we're working on solutions, and we will see that the margin goes up, but not the margin in Larry's single area. The margin goes up for Kuka in total, because if we are offering to a customer like Daimler a solution or efficiency gains, then Stefan, Larry, and David have to work together. Intelligent product, process know-how, data know-how. And out of the three, out of Kuka, there comes solution. And it should be above 7.5%, as Lucy mentioned.
Very clear. Thank you. Can I just ask, what do you think about your local Chinese competitors? Obviously, very active, but in the very low end of the market so far. But just can't help but pick up on the comment saying that industrial robot in 5 years' time is not going to look too different to what it looks now, and that's not too different to 5 years ago, so it's kind of a 10-year cycle of not looking very different.
Shahamil, the Chinese competition, what do we see? 500 robotic companies in China?
Oh, yeah, it's an amazing scenery, really. I think robotics is so much more than the arm, and that's what we try to display here with all of us on stage today. So if you bring out a good robot arm, but you don't have the rest of the components, I think you will have very limited success, even if you work in your home country, because the customer and the user will need so much more. Service, monitoring we're talking about here, solutions, all the things that makes that robot work good day after day after day. It's not about the mechanical robot arm. It's not that easy. And that is making it very difficult to step into this business, and we are pretty happy for that.
Yeah, and maybe let me add to that. Lots of companies, and I have great respect from small companies starting the robotic, but as you know, the company, our company in robotics, you know, we have a big installed basis, 150,000 robots installed, and price-wise, we have global products, global platforms. So we are sourced globally, we have global benchmark, global pricing. There is not a Chinese price, not a Japanese price, or a U.S. price, one global price. And I think also the respect of the mechatronics, this payload and speed of robots combined with the data expertise and the opportunity in the future. So I think it is, you know, the big four companies, the two Japanese, the two European ones, have still 70% of all markets. Clearly, in the Chinese market will change robotics, and robotics will change the Chinese market. But I think we are focusing, we're looking, you know, the robotic was key topic of the last 5 years plan in China, and it's again topic of the next 5 years plan. And so it's very obvious and it's very clear that there will be China will be a game changer and robotics will be a game changer.
Thank you very much.
Question from Peter Rodenreich, please.
Peter Rodenreich from Baader Bank. Could you please comment on the intentions of your on your cooperation with your new bigger shareholder, Midea? So.
You know, as stated publicly, we work with all big shareholders, and we have normal business relationship with Voith. We have relationship with Rittal, and we also have relationship with Midea. Midea, for example, is using our robots also before they did invest into KUKA. So this is an existing relationship, and on top what we see and where we have discussion, Midea has 150 logistical centers in China. And this is a huge potential for Swisslog, and it could be also a big opportunity for KUKA to automate. And then clearly, like, white goods automation is a big one, but just the big topic is 150 logistics centers.
Question on the left-hand side, please.
Just a quick follow-up on that. Do you think Midea will potentially become a competitor of yours in China because they want to make robots as well?
You know, you have to ask this Midea and not me, but I can tell you, why should you invest in a robotic company and build your own robotic company? So I think Midea is, but the question is, you know, they might look in also other areas. Robotics is a big area, so smaller robots. But, you know, that's a question. I believe they are a big believer in our strategy, in our big strategy in going into smaller robots to be a global robotic company. And everything else you would have to ask them.
Yeah, I have asked them. They want to build robots. But I think
they
do want to build their own robots, I guess. But I think the question maybe I want to ask more to you is that if they want to have a JV with you in China, would you be open to that kind of idea? Or you don't really want to maybe educate a big competitor in China?
You know, so you know more than I don't know, so it's something difficult for me to comment. You know, just today we have all our companies 100% controlled in China. So we don't have, we have one joint venture, which is a legacy joint venture out of Rice, where we have a 50-50 with Yawai. We have cooperation, then we have sales joint ventures where we do joint ventures to get into markets stronger and faster. Everything else is 100% controlled. And there must be a convincing business case to do joint ventures. The majority of joint ventures I looked at from far, and that's very good that we looked from far, because most of them after 3 or 4 years did not survive. And, you know, it always depends who's bringing what to the table. I believe if you invest in the company like Midea and KUKA, I'm believing in this company, so very happy to increase shareholding, whatever shareholders want. But I think we have the greatest platform for robotics in the world, having the greatest team, and therefore also have the big opportunity in China.
Thank you.
Okay, one question here by Mr. Kors.
Thank you, Christian Kors, Warburg Research. I have two questions. First, you mentioned in the beginning of your presentation your speedboats like KB, where you have significant shareholdings. Do you have any call options to increase your shareholding up to 100% in case these speedboats are successful? And secondly, last year or 2 years ago, when you presented the IVA, I think you also presented the Sunrise IT concept, which is an open platform, and I think you also stated that you want to expand this IT platform to the remaining products. Given that connectivity and interoperability of products is very important for the Internet of Things, have you made any progress in the last year, and can you maybe give us an update?
Okay. I think on David, we will elaborate on Sunrise. Clearly, we make progress here, and it's clear it's a platform game, and you have to also, once you buy companies like Swisslog and Rice, you have to bring them all on one platform, which takes a couple of years once are all on the same platform. But clearly, the goal is to have all our intelligent products on the same platform where we migrate to. Coming to the speedboats. You know, the idea of a speedboat is you find people who have been in the tech or in universities for 10 or 15 years, worked in the US, come back and want to start a company. And, you know, you can try to get call options, but in the end, they don't want this. If you have a guy, and it depends really, we have three participations, and these guys believe in their company, and they don't want to sell. They want to drive the company, and we can benefit, and we can participate on a level. We ask for control of a couple of these companies. But, you know, if you are a convinced young CEO wants to have your technology, you're not giving away control, because the opportunity for a small company is, we are a small company compared to Siemens. So we believe we are in some areas faster, but still 3 billion means we have lots of regulation. And if you're a small company with 20 or 30 people, you, in the end, you are young, wild troop, and you can do things where we have maybe limitations and regulations, and where we are just, you know, we have a totally different brand name. And so most of the companies are small companies with some ideas, and a little bit like they start like the Silicon Valley culture. So I have an idea for one special vertical. Let us start, and I'm looking for partners. And then either you find pure financial partners, or in this time we were happy that we could also invest and convince that KUKA can invest. And in the end, now you have to see some speedboats also, you know, and it must be fair. In the pharma industry, you have lots of small companies. Some speedboats don't make it, which some you cannot come along. So I think also on speedboats, you have to take into account that some work and some do not work. But in the end, if possible, we would try to get call option. In this case, we do not have call option. Yeah, please.
Yeah, on the KSS Sunrise case, there's really two critical points. I think we have a major emphasis on what we'll call a smooth install-based transition. So we have a strategy that we're executing in R&D, and we'll be rolling out. We'll be migrating the existing KSS capabilities to Sunrise as smoothly as possible with a whole set of tooling around that. And then the second point is I think the Internet of Things and Industry 4.0 is moving rather quickly as well. So both the original KSS platform and the Sunrise platform will both provide Internet-ready connectivity.
Hey, are there any questions left from your side? If not, thank you very much for your attention, also on the phone. If you have further questions, please feel free to call IR. Perhaps better tomorrow than today, of course, busy here at the fair. Thank you for participation, and goodbye.